and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Hope you had a great holiday season. Back to work, eh? We're going to listen to Florida this week. This morning, we're going to listen to the year-end review on Florida this week. Later on, we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. And during Florida this week, too, if you have comments about the discussion about the top stories of the year, you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. Florida This Week is a program that appears on WEDU, the PBS station in Tampa, and it gets into 16 counties. We're going to listen to last Friday's show right now here on WMNF. Coming up next, as we say goodbye to 2017, we'll take a look at the stories and people that had the biggest impact on the state this year. What was the most important story? We'll discuss that next on the year-end edition of Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. At the end of December every year, we invite some of your favorite panelists to take a look back at the last 12 months to the most significant Florida events of the year, hoping to get some insight in the year to come. This week on our panel, Dan Ruth is a columnist for the Tampa Bay Times. John Dingfelder is a former Tampa City Council member and a Democrat. Paula Dockery is a former state legislator and a newspaper columnist and is no party affiliated. And April Schiff is a political consultant and a Republican. So nice to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, this year we saw some major political and weather disruptions. We're going to count down the top 10 stories of the year as voted by our panel members, starting with number 10. Number 10, Florida governor's race shaping up. Next year's governor's race began to shape up quickly with Republican Adam Putnam announcing in May in front of a huge crowd in Bartow. The Democrats, who are former Congresswoman Gwen Graham, Central Florida Congressman Chris King, businessman Chris King, rather, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum and Miami Beach Mayor Phil Levine not running, are Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn and Orlando Attorney John Morgan. So, April, is this the way that you think that the race is going to look 6 months from now? Those are the names that are going to be in the race?
I think those names will be in the race. There may be more names in the race as well. Everyone's anticipating that Richard Corcoran, the Speaker of the House, will be jumping into the Republican primary. And you may see some others as well before
it's over.
Ron
DeSantis running in?
That's what we hear.
Yeah. Any other Republican?
Those are the only two that I've heard about, so we'll see.
Paula, do you think this is the way the race is going to look?
Well, you know, there's so much chaos going on in Washington and in Tallahassee. I don't hear any rumors of any big names, big surprises jumping in. So I agree with April on the two Republicans that may jump into the race. The Democrat field seems big enough already, so I think we're looking at that, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a surprise.
Does anybody think John Morgan is going to run as an independent when he looks at this field and says, well, maybe I could do something?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, it's very tough for a third-party candidate to get elected. This is such a huge state to mobilize the kind of campaign operation you would need to get elected. This is Adam Putnam's race to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
even with DeSantis coming in and Corcoran challenging him, and
again, he has almost universal name recognition statewide, and I think that will bode well for him.
All right,
but it is the year of the woman.
Maybe.
So Gwen Graham is it?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Well, number 9 story, Governor Rick Scott and House Speaker Richard Corcoran disagree on funding Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida in the 2017 budget. The two agencies were targets of Corcoran during the regular session, calling them corporate welfare. Governor Scott complained that lawmakers were killing jobs and could wreck the state's tourism marketing agency. After a raucous 3-day special session, a compromise was reached, allowing both sides to claim victory. For a while there, there was bad blood between House Speaker Corcoran and the governor, Paula. And
I'm not sure that wasn't just for show. I think they've been close for years, and I think that that was Corcoran taking the position that he's publicly taken for a long time against corporate welfare with his AFP folks. I don't really think that there was hard feelings there. I think that was more for show.
So do you think that was for show, April?
I think not all of it was for show. I think that there were some good intentions on both sides, in that Corcoran wanted to eliminate some of the things that he thought were ridiculous spending amounts on things that weren't that beneficial and didn't show a return on their investments, because that's his big thing, is letting everybody know that he's watching the dollars in the state budgets. So I think that some of it could have been, but not really entirely. And I think that there was a compromise that allowed everything to move forward so that they both got a little bit of what they were looking for and still maintained the funding for both of these agencies.
How important is that AFP money? Americans for Prosperity, that's the Koch brothers' money. And if Corcoran is taking the side of the AFP on this issue, was he looking down the road to say, I want to run for...
Entirely possible.
Governor, so I want some of that Koch brothers' money, so I'm going to take a Koch brothers' stand on this issue.
It's also an issue that resonates with the base.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, our number eight story is the Constitution Revision Commission meets across Florida. The commission meets every 20 years to propose changes to the Constitution. Some of those proposed amendments that are being considered include changing the closed primary system here in Florida and restoring voting rights to felons. Amendments have to be approved by 22 of the commission's 37 members before making it onto the 2018 ballot. Then they would need approval by 60% of the voters. John, let me ask you, this is really important, the Constitution Commission, Revision Commission, but they're flying under the radar.
Well, they're flying under the radar, but I also look at it as rather a real sham, and it's a dangerous sham, because if you look to see who picked those 37 people, the governor picked many of them. The Republican governor picked many of them. Republican Speaker of the House picked many of them. The Republican President of the Senate picked many of them, and the Chief Judge picked two or three of them. And therefore, the whole thing, I looked at it last night, the whole group of 37, out of that, like, I think there's four or five Democrats, and the rest of them are Republicans.
So,
and
not a very fair process.
It's not a very fair process, and it really, that if anything should be revised, it should be that process.
It's chaired by a virtual Tea Party guy, Carlos Baruff, who is a failed Senate candidate who's out there.
Yeah.
But it's dangerous, too, because they can put some very dangerous things on the ballot. Of course, the good news is it has to get 60%.
All right, so Paula, you've been through this. What do you think John's point is that
it's not a membership balanced commission. Yeah. I think that when it was put into law, that at one time it served a real purpose. I think it's become so partisan. I think that a lot of people are concerned that what the commission will end up doing is putting things back on the ballot to take them out of the Constitution that citizens' initiatives put in. I have a lot of worries about it. I agree with John that it's flying under the radar. I don't think voters are going to pay attention until it makes it to the ballot, and that's when people of goodwill and good conscience need to speak up and say what's really happening, because I fear it will be written in a way that sounds good, like that solar amendment that really was anti-solar.
Right. Is it true that when voters, if they get six or seven amendments on the ballot, they just kind of throw up their hands and vote no? Is that true, April?
That's the biggest problem with what's going on here, because whether they're good or bad amendments, when you put a multitude of amendments on the ballot, at the bottom of the ballot, people aren't going to vote for them.
Plus the wording's so critical.
Yeah, and they don't take the time to read them and understand them, and they just won't vote for them.
And newspapers used to have a lot of input on that sort of thing, but newspapers aren't around as much and don't have as much power and control anymore.
Wait a minute.
Sorry, Dan.
They're still being published.
Sorry, Dan.
All right. Well, number seven, the St. Pete City Council voted to limit corporate campaign financing in city elections. St. Petersburg became the first city in the nation to limit the contributions to political action committees. It's seen as a rebuke to the 2010 Citizens United Supreme Court decision that removed limits on how much money individuals can give to PACs that seek to influence elections. So, John, St. Pete sticking out its neck. Some people disagreed with this, saying that there's going to be a lawsuit. St. Pete's going to have to defend it. But a lot of people like this idea of trying to do away with Citizens United.
Yeah. When I was on city council, one of the last things I tried to do was to have some local campaign finance reform in terms of trying to reduce and limit the amount of money, including corporate money, that goes into these local races. Because I think money at any level of government in terms of campaign contributions is dangerous. And I applaud the City Council of St. Pete for doing this. I mean, ultimately, they say it might get struck down as unconstitutional, and that's fine. But in the meantime, you know, good for them.
In the meantime, you're spending all this, tons of money on legal fees for a lost cause. I mean, there are more important things the City Council needs to do than start trying to futz around with Citizens United. Fix the potholes, you know, encourage economic development, and leave these legal machinations, which are going to cost St. Petersburg a lot of money.
But Dan, there are national groups that are behind this idea of trying to do away with Citizens United. Yes, they say they're going to subsidize the legal costs.
Fine, have a nice time. Do you think the Supreme Court, as it's currently constituted, will strike down Citizens United? Anybody want to take a vote here around this table? It's a waste of time and money.
Yeah. What about the idea?
Lovely. I have lots of lovely ideas, but they shouldn't cost people an arm and a leg.
April, what do you think?
I think campaign finance reform is a great idea in a lot of areas. I'm not sure this is the way to go about accomplishing that, but I do think it was motivated by the huge amount of money that was spent in the mayor's race in St. Petersburg. They saw more outside political money active in that race than has ever been active in a city council or a city race.
And sometimes you just have to send a message, you know, and I think that's what council did. They're sending a message that this is not a good thing.
Western Union still works.
Okay. Well, our number six story, town hall meetings across the state to protest the repeal of Obamacare. Hundreds of Floridians crammed into town halls across the state to plead with lawmakers to improve, not repeal, the Affordable Care Act. The energy of the crowd was compared to the Tea Party rallies 8 years ago. Republican efforts to repeal Obamacare were not successful in the end. Paul, let's start with you. The anger over repealing Obamacare, does it translate into the 2018 election?
The Republicans did for Obamacare what Democrats never could, and that was to make it popular. The latest poll numbers show it at 51% approval, 39% disapproval. And even with the current president cutting down the enrollment period, getting rid of 90% of the advertising money, getting rid of most of the money for the navigators, enrollment was still up was still very good this year. It won't be as good as last year. But so Obamacare, people are now saying they like it. And I don't think that the Republicans in Congress paid attention, but those town hall meetings were the beginning of energizing a group of people that had not been energized prior to that. So is it the start of something? Yeah, I think it's the start of a Democratic surge.
John, does it have legs to 2018? Does it have legs to November of the coming year?
I think it does. I think that you know, seeing all those people out at rallies, I think they will continue on, and 2018 is not that far away. Mm-hmm. I also think that you know, the Trump and his crowd were very slippery, because when they took it on head on, they failed and they failed and they failed. So what did they do? They took it on the backside, and they chopped at it administratively, and now they chopped at it through the tax bill. And so I think people need to be very vigilant about that.
And I think Republicans were really shocked that after 8 years of talking about repealing and replacing it, that the Republicans really didn't have a plan. And that was a little shocking to me, too, because you would think now's their opportunity. They're going to come up with something good. And they never did.
Well, John talked about the backdoor. I mean, the tax plan does take away the mandate. And President Trump said a couple of days ago that the tax plan is essentially repealing Obamacare. So when it's repealed, April, is that a good thing for the Republican Party?
Well, all of the Republicans in the last election cycle ran on repeal and replace Obamacare. They have to do something, or they're going to have to face that at the ballot box. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to do anything they can, because they failed to repeal it and replace it.
So it's a promise. It's a promise to
their
voters.
It's a campaign promise, and they need to try to do the best they can.
So Dan, by keeping that promise, are the Republicans in a good place or a bad place?
These are in a terrible place.
Why?
Because as Paula pointed out, it's a program that people actually like. And it's very difficult in political life to take something away from somebody that you've given them or provided them. The only time this has ever worked was the repeal of prohibition. And when you give people a program and people are actually benefiting from it, and now you try to take it away from them, people remember that.
Does anybody here have friends who have been either hurt by the ACA or helped by the ACA?
Helped.
You've got friends that have been helped.
Definitely helped.
definitely helped.
Well, but the health insurance industry is in a shambles because of this, and premiums are skyrocketing, and it's turning into a disaster for a lot of people that aren't benefiting from the ACA.
Well, I'm going to disagree that Obamacare is why the health care industry is in shambles. I think that all these attempts to repeal it have left the corporations, the insurance companies, in a position to not know where they're going to be. And it's very hard to manage your risk when you don't know what the law is going to look like. So I think if they had adopted the plan, the bipartisan plan that was being worked on, we'd be in much better shape than pretending to have killed Obamacare, because it's not dead. They just took away the individual mandate.
And with the mandates taken away, premiums are going to go up because it's going to be sick people who are in Obamacare, and it's going to be healthy people.
It could be as many as, 19 million people, 13 million people, whatever. Yeah. I mean, millions of people will now be prevented from getting health care because of this wonderful tax bill that got passed this week.
All right. Well, our number, April, do you want to? I'll give you a chance. Okay. All right. Our number five story, Russian hackers try to break into five Florida county elections offices days before the November election. Five county officials say they received malicious emails. Election supervisors in Hillsborough, Pasco, Citrus, Clay, and Volusia counties all say they received the emails. An attachment on the emails could have compromised each county's systems, but none of the staff in those supervisors' offices opened the emails. Paula, phishing to try to get into our system.
It's pretty scary stuff. Yeah. And what else are they trying to do? Are they trying to get into our electric grid? Are they trying to get into our financial records? And there hasn't been an appropriate response at the national level. And this should not be a partisan issue. When Russia attacks America, everybody, Republican, Democrat, Independent, ought to be upset about it and ought to be looking into how can we prevent this from happening again. And to date, that's not happened.
April, you think the national response has been adequate?
I think that what was obvious is that the supervisors of elections were prepared and that their systems did not allow them to become compromised. So I'm not sure that I think that something needs to be done to continue to ensure that it proceeds that way so that there is no damage done and no hacking really does happen. But I do think it shows that they were prepared and they were sufficiently cautious and not to allow a problem.
John, what do you think?
I think it's all fake news from these five supervisors because clearly Putin says none of this is going on.
And also, we also should really think about having paper to back up all of these elections like we used to. I'm very concerned just because they say they don't think they got into the hack. How do we know? How do we know for sure?
All right. Well, our number four story, Senator Jack Latvala resigns amid sexual misconduct allegations in Tallahassee. Facing a public corruption investigation, Clearwater GOP State Senator Jack Latvala resigned. A report by a retired judge concluded that he likely violated state corruption laws by trading legislative favors for physical contact and for sexually harassing and groping multiple women. In a letter, Latvala said, "I have never intentionally dishonored my family, my constituents, or the Florida Senate." And Dan, let's start with you on this one. Latvala, that's an earthquake in politics, isn't
Paula
it?
Paula knows him much better than I do, but he was a political figure, who wielded tremendous influence and power. He was also known in Tallahassee as being one of the most bumptious, arrogant bullies in the Florida legislature, which is no small accomplishment. And now, sooner or later, you know, those people you step on the way up, you meet them on the way back down. And this is what has happened to him. The sexual allegations are one thing, the groping and whatnot, but he has this criminal issue of perhaps trading his vote for the sexual favors. And that crosses a whole different line. The other part of this story that I'm just bumfuzzled over is this was a guy who wanted to be the governor of the state of Florida. Engaging in that sort of, he never thought it would come back to bite him in the keister. And secondly, in the stories we had, there are these wonderful details about him throwing huge, raging hissy fits if the office donuts weren't available. Like, this guy really needs another donut. But is that the kind of temperament we expect of a gubernatorial candidate?
April, Latvala was a lion in the legislature, really important to the Tampa Bay area. What do you make? I mean, were you surprised by the allegations and the fact that the investigations were pretty conclusive that he did some really bad stuff.
I was surprised, actually. I mean, I know Senator Latvala, and I've known him for a long time, and I was surprised by the allegations. I also think that it's somewhat unfortunate that the allegations themselves can destroy a political career so quickly without the ability to really defend yourself and listen to the other side. I also think that we are going to see, hopefully, some type of change of the environment in Tallahassee, because you're hearing more and more and more of all these things going on, and it's really unfortunate, and it needs to change. I think
it's sort of like our own local version of Al Franken, because I see the guys very parallel as being very intelligent people on, you know, potentially on the rise. And then all of a sudden, like you say, going down very quickly with mere allegations. Right. Not that I doubt the women, you know, that's not what I'm saying, but they're done. They're both, obviously, they're done.
Well, yeah, the minute it comes out, they're done. There's no opportunity to rebound from that in the political world,
and that's why it's so damning.
He's complaining. Donald Trump.
Paul, I want to ask you, because you served in the legislature, sexual harassment in Tallahassee, and women being powerless for the most part, with a few exceptions.
I didn't feel it that much. What when you were a woman legislator, what you tried so hard to do is get in the room when the decisions were being made. You know, you weren't invited to the poker games. You weren't in the locker room. So you wanted to be there. And so that was the main thing, is you can't be perceived as being one of them if you can't be in the same room when the deals are being cut, when things are being happening. And I have a feeling that this is getting conflated with little offenses being put in the same batch as really serious offenses, and it's going to end up hurting women in the end, because the men who are in charge are going to not want the women to be around because they're going to fear that, you know, it's going to have a chilling effect. They're going to fear, well, can we trust her, and what is she going to say, and what if I accidentally touch her, or what? So, you know, was there hugging and kissing and stuff going on? Yeah, but as a woman in the process, my main priority was, I want to be in on these decisions and these discussions, and not to be excluded. And if that means I had to get, you know, hugged a little, you know, so be it. That's just the way it is.
Sort of like a Tallahassee version of Hamilton.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, our number three story, Seminole Heights serial killer leaves four dead in Tampa. For 6 weeks, the Tampa neighborhood was in fear. Four persons, Benjamin Mitchell, Monica Hoffa, Anthony Naboa, and Ronald Felton, were fatally shot and killed. In late November, a suspect, Howell Donaldson III, was arrested at an Ybor City McDonald's. He was charged with four counts of first-degree murder. Dan, let me start with you. Tampa police did a pretty good job on this with the help from some citizens.
As a former police reporter who's covered lots of these stories, I had a lot of empathy for what was going on there. And when you have a serial killer, and there's all kinds of different kinds of serial killers, this guy was operating, if he's guilty, was operating on a system of picking his victims at random. And that's what really strikes fear into a community, because there's no common denominator to the victims. The other thing that I think Chief Brian Dugan, who was the interim police chief when this crime spree began, I think acquitted himself extremely well, and did and it's so much so that he got the job full time. And it's sometimes, and I feel people's frustrations because they watch CSI and Law and Order, and they think these things can be solved like in an hour.
Yeah.
And it's mind-numbing, difficult, hard work. And as is so often the case, the case gets turned on a bizarre twist of fate, where the alleged killer hands the gun to somebody and says, "Hey, can you watch this for me for a few minutes?" And the person hands it to a cop, and that's how they got him. But Dugan did a great job. And then we had the sign language thing, but we don't really know.
Well, our number two story, Mayor Rick Kreisman is reelected in St. Petersburg. In one of the most expensive races ever, Mayor Rick Kreisman defeated former Mayor Rick Baker. It was a contentious race that pitted two strong mayors against each other. Sewage issues and climate change were two of the issues that played a role in that campaign. And Dan and Paula, this question is for you. I think Rick Baker only got in because he thought he could win.
Yeah. Baker had a short window of opportunity to win in the primary, and once it got into a runoff, then it was just the two of them opposing each other. And And Kreisman, you know, did a pretty, he had some baggage. Boy, he had all that raw sewage and all that kind of thing. But he did a good retail job, and he managed to also appeal to the gay community and the black community of St. Right. Petersburg, who really, I think, carried him over the finish line. And Baker, so déclassé, you know, doesn't concede until weeks later with a tweet. Come on, man.
Paula?
So I think the national atmosphere kind of it got involved in this race a little bit, but I think that there were two attitudes that Rick Baker had that turned some voters off. The first one is he got in because he thought he could win, and that arrogance showed. Mm-hmm. And then when he didn't win, it turned to bitterness. Mm-hmm. And I think that was very unattractive. And so I think that that Rick Baker lost more than Rick Kreisman won.
Okay. And now for the number one story of the year as voted by our panel members. Drum roll, please. Three hurricanes sweep through Florida, the Gulf Coast, and the Caribbean. Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria caused devastation across the Gulf and the Caribbean. Irma swept up the spine of the state, making a direct hit on the Keys. Maria devastated Puerto Rico, sending thousands of displaced families to Florida, and the death toll in Puerto Rico may be as high as 1,000. Huge impact on Florida, may change our politics here.
Yes.
In the state
of Florida.
In so many ways.
The devastation to people was just tremendous, and that they hit so close together, it was very difficult on a lot of people. Puerto Rico still hasn't recovered and may not recover for a very long time, which is why we're seeing this huge influx of Puerto Ricans into mostly in Central Florida, the Orlando and the I-4 corridor. Definitely could change the political face of Florida. I know both parties are doing massive registration drives.
Outreach to
I do think that the hurricanes gave the governor, Rick Scott, an opportunity that he took very good advantage of in getting out with the people and becoming more of a little more warm contact with the people, and I think that was a big advantage for him.
And he was everywhere in that storm.
He was awesome, yeah. And he was out there, and he was doing what he was supposed to be doing. And I think people saw him in a new light that they'd never seen him before.
In that nursing home thing, I think the governor took a real hit on that
because he gave out his cell phone.
He gave out his cell phone. Just call me if there's a problem, and then people are dropping dead down there. And yeah. I think he took a hit that we can't forget.
You know, I wish we had more time, but that's all we've got. Thank you for watching Florida This Week. Thank you for a great show. Happy New Year, everybody.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night, the year-end show, counting down the top 10 stories of the year with John Dingfelder. He was the Democrat on that panel, a former Tampa City councilperson. Paula Dockery is now an independent. She was once in the Florida Senate, and she used to be a Republican. April Schiff was the Republican on that panel, and Dan Ruth from the Tampa Bay Times was also on that panel. So if you want to comment about anything you've heard here for the last 25 minutes or so, you can email us at this address, dj@wmnf.org. Our phone producer, Jan Simpson, is away, so we're going to try to open up the phones without her. I think Jan is feeling under the weather. So we're going to try to take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And you can send your email into the studio here. Again, the address dj@wmnf.org. Well, the cold weather is continuing. It's going to be in the 40s tonight. And then tomorrow night, it'll be in the lower 30s. It'll be maybe in the upper 20s and lower 30s on Thursday night. And then on Friday night, it'll be in the lower 30s here in the Bay Area. It gradually begins to warm on Saturday night when temperatures will be in the upper 30s here in the Bay Area. But that bone-chilling cold that they're having up north is affecting us down here. The cold night shelters are open in Pinellas Park. It's the Boys and Girls Club in Pinellas Park. It's going to be available as a cold night shelter beginning tomorrow night. And that's on 61st Street, 7790 61st Street in Pinellas Park. In Pasco, one of the shelters that's opening for people that need a place to stay, the Joining Hands Mission, which is at 3333 U.S. Highway 19 North, Suite 1 in Holiday. That's in West Pasco. In East Pasco, there's Restored Hope, which has limited space, and the Samaritan Project of Zephyr Hills, which will not take pets. So you can go to the cold weather shelter there in Pasco County. That's, I guess, beginning tonight. Those are some of the places you can go. And there's also shelters all over the Bay Area. In Clearwater, the Peace Memorial Presbyterian Church will take men and women. And then the Northwest Presbyterian Church in St. Petersburg on 54th Avenue is taking people. The Turning Point in St. Petersburg on 5th Avenue North is taking people. Salvation Army in downtown St. Petersburg on 4th Street South is taking people. And My Place in Recovery on 16th Street South in St. Petersburg is taking people. The Boys and Girls Club 2 in Pinellas Park is taking people. The Tarpon Springs First United Methodist Church of Tarpon Springs will take people who are evacuating because of the cold weather. Hillsborough County has a bunch of shelters open. The Brandon Community Center, the Jackson Springs Recreation Center, the Hands of Hope Outreach in Plant City, the Waimama Senior Center, Metropolitan Ministries on North Florida Avenue in downtown Tampa, and the Salvation Army in downtown Tampa. So we're going to take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. David writes this: one story that I thought was worthy of inclusion for 2017, and maybe you mentioned it, was Tampa hosting the College Football National Championship last January. I think that the Tampa Bay area did a great job with hosting the game and the ancillary events. I volunteered for it and helped drive dignitaries around town. That was fun, writes David. You know, one story that didn't make that list was the debate over Confederate statues that took place in Tampa and Hillsborough County, and also in Lakeland and Bradenton, too. That was one of the stories. We let our panelists vote on the issues, and yeah, there were a couple of stories that could have been added to that list had we had a longer list. Tensions may be easing on the North Korean, or on the Korean Peninsula, rather. Today, South Korea offered high-level talks with rival North Korea to find ways to cooperate on next month's Winter Olympics in the South. Seoul's proposal follows a diplomatic overture from the North yesterday, offering the possibility of better ties after a year that saw increased fear of war on the Korean Peninsula. Let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. We can talk about some items in the news. Unfortunately, Jan Simpson is not feeling well, so we don't have somebody producing, so we're going to just take these calls as they come in, 813-239-9663. But it looks like there's hope for maybe a lessening of tension on the Korean Peninsula. Marco Rubio told the Fort Myers News Press newspaper that he believes the recently passed GOP tax bill did too much to help America's largest corporations. Senator Rubio predicted that you're going to see a lot of these multinationals buy back stock shares to drive up the stock price. He added that some of these corporations are sitting on historic levels of cash and will be forced to pay dividends to shareholders. That is not going to create dramatic economic growth, Rubio says. Rubio voted for that tax bill. It was passed by the Republican-controlled Congress and signed into law by President Trump last week. It slashed the corporate tax rate down from 35% to 21%, and it also includes a number of provisions that benefit the country's wealthiest residents. The semi-official news agency in Iran is reporting that 450 people have been arrested over 3 days of protests in Tehran. The protests began last Thursday over economic issues, and now it's expanded to include lots of questioning about the way Iran's government is formed. 813-239-9663. Let's see if we can take a phone call. Caller, you're on MNF. What's your name and where are you calling from?
450 people been arrested.
Hey, caller, you got to listen to your phone if you can. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Economic issues.
All right. Well, maybe we'll go back to that person later. Here's somebody who calls himself a monk. I guess this is a Chip. Chip says, I'm so tired of Dan Ruth's self-proclaimed pragmatism regarding politics and elections, as it results in nothing more than the continued status quo. Nan Rich can't win, Bernie Sanders can't win, John Morgan can't win as an independent, etc. He fails to account for the growing influence of millennials and social media, along with the declining influence of the mainstream media. He's a clever, witty writer with lots of knowledge about political history. But when it comes to the current political landscape, I believe time has passed him by. I'm much more interested in what younger generations think, and having more of them on your show might broaden your audience. That's a Chip in Tampa. Yeah, we do try to mix it up. There's a lot of young people in politics that we've had on the show over the years. 813-239-9663. Let's see if we can get this person. We'll try this person. Hi, caller. You're on WMNF. What would you like to comment about? What's your name, too?
Yeah, hey, Rob. This is Steve in Tampa.
Hi, Steve. What's up?
What's up? I'll comment on the whole Iran thing. And I don't know if you saw it yesterday how Netanyahu had came out. I guess it was on somewhere and was like, you know, praising the protesters and all that. And I was thinking to myself, you know, if there's anything that he could have done to sabotage things over there, that would be it. Because they may not like that regime, but they definitely do not like Israel. And what he needed to do is just keep his mouth shut.
So it would be better if he kept his mouth shut, because then the Iranian people in charge would...
They're now going to say that, you know, it's outside agitators and it's Israel, and that he has just given the regime a nice big weapon.
President Trump has said similar things, hasn't he?
Yes, he has, and he's just as ignorant as, you know, what they need to do is just be quiet and wait and see how this thing plays out. But, you know, they're just, you know...
They're screwing it up.
Yes, they are.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, dude.
All right. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Caller, you're on MNF. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Carl Dunedin.
Hi, Carl. Thanks for calling in. What's up?
I was listening to the show, and I hope somebody will remind the listeners that I think Jack Latvala's sister is Susan, and she was involved in Pinellas politics, and
That was his former wife, Susan Latvala, who was on the county commission,
and she was awful, just awful. I could review some of the lowdown stuff she did, but you know, people just need to know that, you know, he's not the only Latvala that disgraced Florida politics.
And just give us an example of what Susan Latvala did that you disagreed with.
Well, she was against the, she tried to get the water from a preserve for a private golf course, and she befriended the people that were trying to stop it, and she was everything they were talking about, you know, behind closed doors, she was sharing it with her political buddies. I mean, she tried to get a condo in down in Ozona, and she tried to backdoor that, and she was just, you know, not a I didn't think she was a good person.
All right, well, Carl, thanks a lot. Thanks for jumping in and voicing your opinion.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. Good to hear from you. I think Susan Latvala was on the Pinellas County Commission. Somebody may know better than me, from about 2000 to 2014. And all right. So let's take some more phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I want to bring up, too, in just a moment, an interview that President Trump gave to the New York Times when he was in Mar-a-Lago. And I'll tell you what, when you call in, just let the phone ring. It may ring for a long time, but we'll eventually pick you up. 813-239-9663. And here's an unsigned email, and it says, the demise of WUSF was underreported this year, And then this person is also does not think highly of Polk County's Sheriff Grady Judd, saying, do you think he's taking Arpaio's mantle as America's media horrorist sheriff? Grady Judd is very good at getting media attention. I think that's a talent that any politician wants, but you may be right. Maybe he goes in front of the cameras too often. We can talk about that. 813-239-9663. That was from one of our anonymous emailers. Let's go to this next caller. Hey, caller, you're on M&F. What's your name and where are you calling from? Caller, you got to turn down your radio and listen to your phone. Caller, you're on WM&F. What would you like to say? All right, so they are listening to their radio, not listening to their phone. I'll tell you what, caller, I'll pick you up in just a second, so be ready. Let's try it one more time. Caller, you're on WM&F. Can you hear me? All right, they're still listening to their radio, not to their phone. 813-239-9663. Well, here's a really terrible story that I want to mention. Two young people were shot and killed last night by security guards in East Tampa. I'll just read the story as reported by the Associated Press. Security guards in Hillsborough County fatally shot two people at a club that was hosting a teen night last night. The Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office says that there were a series of fights at the place called The Club on North 50th Street. And the organizers had to close the doors at about 10:30 p.m. last night. Between 150 and 200 people were leaving the building, and security guards said they heard fireworks and then gunshots. Well, the security guards searched for where the shots were coming from. They saw a person firing a gun from a car. Both returned fire, killing a man and a woman inside the vehicle. And they just a few minutes ago released the names of the people who were killed last night. Giad Grant, who was born in 1992, and Jalissa Jackson, who was born in 2002. So Jalissa is very young, and Giad, relatively young, killed last night. And so we're going to find, I'm sure, as the hours go by and the days go by, we're going to find out more about that. 813-239-9663. Well, let's try another phone call. Remember, let your phone ring and listen to your phone. Don't listen to your radio. 813-239-9663. Here's our next caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? All right, caller, you still got that problem. You're still listening to your radio and not to your phone. You're going to make it on the air if you ever listen to your phone and not your radio. Caller, are you there? All right. Just maybe that person is playing games, which is okay. 813-239-9663. This interesting story last week really was underreported. China is lowering taxes on foreign companies, giving a tax break designed to retain investment. This is in direct response to the Republican tax plan that was passed earlier this month in Congress. The Chinese Finance Ministry says that companies will be exempt from withholding taxes on profits so long as the profits are reinvested in industries specified by Beijing. The Chinese exemption is retroactive to the 1st of January of last year, meaning that foreign companies would receive a refund on taxes paid during 2017. So the question always was, when the Republicans passed the tax plan, was could other countries simply lower their tax rates and quash any effect of the Republican tax plan for corporations? And there's an example where China is lowering their corporate tax rate in response to what happened here. So is there going to be an incentive for companies to move back to the U.S.? What do you think? 813-239-9663. President Trump is predicting a tremendous year as he bids farewell to 2017 and looks ahead to 2018. Trump told reporters outside the New Year's Eve party Sunday night at his private South Florida club Mar-a-Lago that it will be, quote, a fantastic 2018. The president says he thinks the stock market will continue to rise and that companies are going to continue to come into the U.S., even predicting a record clip. President pretty upbeat about the future. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Okay. All right. Well, this is now I'm in the Groundhog Day territory with that caller. Let's try another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hi, caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, yes. This is Carlos. I'm calling from Tampa.
Hi, Carlos. What would you like to say?
Yes, I'm calling about the Hillsborough tax bill. There are two parts to it, the ad valorem item taxes and the non-ad valorem assessments. Now, the ad valorem taxes are a percentage of the value of the house. The non-ad valorem assessment is a fixed amount. Now, I was looking at my bill, and my bill has increased by almost 20%. Based on this non-ad valorem assessment. And I find out that this is for Tampa stormwater and stormwater improvement. And so this is for fixing the stormwater problem. Now, I happen to live in an area that is not flooded, that doesn't get into flooding. And most of the flooding occurs in South Tampa, where the more wealthy areas and bigger houses, like $1 million houses over there. But it turns out that it seems that I'm paying the same, as those properties are much, of much wealthy people.
Yeah. Now, Patrick Mantega has written about this in La Gazzetta a lot. Do you live in the city of Tampa, Carlos?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's something that Patrick has complained about, too, saying that they don't have the need to, if you're in Ybor City, if you're in Tampa Heights, or if you're in Seminole Heights or Sulphur Springs, you don't really need to have any sort of stormwater improvement.
Right.
The mayor, I think, says, well, it benefits the whole community. Carlos, one thing I wonder, having driven a lot through South Tampa, is they tend to tear down smaller houses that have some grass around them and, recharge area around them. And they build these giant houses in which the water runs off from the house, and there's nowhere to go on the lot because the house, sometimes goes right up to the lot line. So there's no way for that water to recharge. The water goes into the streets. So if you're on South Manhattan or if you're at Euclid, and I could name all the streets that flood, sometimes Bayshore floods, that's because they don't have any requirement to have any sort of recharge area right there when they build a new house. And yesterday, I drive through Tampa a lot. Yesterday I was driving through, and I was noticing all the empty malls and strip malls in Tampa. So we've paved over a good portion of Tampa, and there's nowhere for the water to go except into the streets, and then it clogs up the storm sewers and sometimes backs up, especially if you're close to water. So you raise a good point. What would you do about it? I mean, could you call your city council person? Have you tried that to complain?
Well, I did go to the city. They basically tell me it is what it is, and I talked to a reporter from, I think it was Tampa Bay Times, and he told me he wrote about it like a year ago, and so basically he didn't want to get involved anymore. Basically what I would like to do is to have this to be a percentage of the value of the house, to be a more fair
assessment. Yeah, I think Patrick Mantega has the same idea, too, over at La Gazzetta. He says that should be... It shouldn't be the folks who live in the less wealthy communities shouldn't be subsidizing the wealthier communities in South Tampa.
Sure.
That's what he says. Well, all right. Well, it's a good issue, Carlos. And it's an issue that goes right to fairness.
Right. Yeah, I would like to know who may be able to make this decision. I already pay my taxes because, I just wanted to save even extra $6 there. But, I know that they, if there is a change, they can refund, some of that difference.
Well, I think it would be up to the mayor and the city council. And what I would do is I'd try to find an ally on city council who feels the same way you do.
Uh-huh.
That's what I would do.
Okay.
All right, Carlos. Thanks a lot. And there should be something. You know, if you're going to build a McMansion, all the water from the runoff of the rains should not just run into the streets. There, you know, here at M&F, we have to have a giant holding pond. And so the water that runs off from our parking lot, which is permeable, by the way, but the water doesn't run off into the street. We capture a lot of that rainwater right here on the grounds that we're on. And that's, you know, that's one of the things you got to do as global warming and climate change is happening. So it's a good point, Carlos. Thanks a lot for making it. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Daniel in Gulfport.
Daniel in Gulfport?
Nathaniel.
Nathaniel, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing today?
I'm good. What's up?
Well, I was listening for phone rings, so I'm not exactly sure what you were just talking about, but I just have to call and say how much I absolutely love you guys. I mean, WSF, WMNF, PBS, all my general news sources have always kept me so informed that 3 weeks ago I saw China changing their taxes because, of course, places like China can instantly, you know, make a change that would counter anything we would try to do on a global scale because they basically just, you know, they can turn on a dime. We're the ones that are slow. So I just have to say it's phenomenally amazing how just ill-informed so many people are when they didn't see this coming, because lots of news sources have been saying, look, our taxes, you know, our effective rate that people pay, you know, these corporations paying is already zero for a lot of these large corporations and already super low for everybody else. If we start trying to compete on a global scale with simply our taxes and not something, say, like quality of living, then we're never going to win. And it's hilarious. We're 2 days into having a new tax system that's supposed to bring back jobs, which, of course, wouldn't, because they actually were giving benefits to these guys they bring their money back so they can make more money overseas and then bring it back without a tax. It's just ridiculous, and I just am extremely thankful that you guys are out there and some good news sources out there, and maybe we can get people to wake up to the fact that there's really a better way of going about doing stuff. If we just take care of the middle class and make sure everybody has a really good standard of living, we will continue to, you know, conquer globally economically.
Yeah, that's how we prosper, to make sure that you don't have a giant number of poor people and you create a healthy middle class. And
that's about the middle class.
Yeah. Nathaniel, thank you so much. Thanks for your compliments,
for
too,
there.
About public broadcasting.
Right on, guys.
All right, thanks. 813-239-9663. I was really surprised that the bright folks in Washington that were debating this issue, the issue of other countries adjusting their tax rates, too, in response to our adjusting our tax rates, that barely came up in that debate the last few days before the tax bill was passed. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hi, caller. This person persists in listening. I guess they're listening to their phone and they're listening to their radio, rather, and they haven't gotten word that they should be listening to their phone. Well, that is pretty frustrating, isn't it? Caller, you know what? If you would just listen to your phone instead of your radio, you would be a radio star right now. You'd be talking and giving us your opinion, and I'm sure a lot of people would be listening in just on the edge of their seat waiting for what you had to say. But instead, unfortunately, you're listening to your radio. Marianne writes, Rick Scott was put on my list as soon as he rejected the high-speed rail. At that time, I thought that this could have really increased the job market as well as tourism. After this hurricane season, even better than that would have been rail from southern to northern Florida, which would have greatly alleviated the evacuation routes. That's Marianne in Clearwater. Now, you'll get a chance probably to weigh in about what you think about Governor Rick Scott, because it looks like he's going to run for U.S. Senate against Bill Nelson, and he may be the only Republican that decides to run in that race. So you have these two really well-known people. Maybe Scott is a little bit better known than Nelson. Rick Scott and Bill Nelson running for the U.S. Senate seat this year. Senator Nelson's term has just expired. So if you want to have a say about Rick Scott, you're going to have another chance this November. So you may want to brush up, tell your friends, and get in line to vote for your favorite person for U.S. Senate. Let's maybe take one call for 30 seconds. Caller, you're on. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, this is Smitty in Tampa.
Hi, Smitty. We just have about 20 seconds. What's up?
Oh, I was just going to say, you know how they're sending those SWAT teams in crazy ways to disrupt the neighbor?
What
news story?
Yeah.
You know, with a news story where they sent out a SWAT team. You can call a SWAT team out on a neighbor if you don't like, and it works.
Okay.
But anyway, I think they're doing it at WMNF. People just calling up, leaving the phone.
They may be. It's their own version of trolling. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, call us up, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 1.